Hello, everyone, and welcome to Friday Food Fight, where we are defining the daily struggle to keep food safe. I am your host, Wes Christian, and each week we will be interviewing special guests from across the country who are doing amazing work in the food service industry. So sit back and enjoy this special episode brought to you by Food Handler Solutions and School Food Handler. Welcome back to another episode of Friday Food Fight. My name is Wes Christian, your host for this week, and I want to thank you all for joining us once again for an amazing episode. As always, we are going to be interviewing a very special guest this week, and I am joined by Mr. Bart Christian, nationally recognized speaker, to introduce our special guest for this week. So, Bart, why don't you go ahead and do the honors for us?
Well, Wes, it's always a pleasure to be here, and it's always a pleasure to be able to talk to such great people across the country. You know, this Zoom thing is not the best avenue, but it is always good to see a smiling face, and today we have a smiling face, and that's Mr. Chris DiRico. Chris is the incoming vice president for the National School Nutrition Association. Just recently got elected. Congratulations on that, Chris. And, you know, I know that you serve now as the child nutrition director for Harris County, and you have got such a broad reach across education. I mean, it's such a, you've had so many roles. I'm just going to read them. I mean, you've been started as a teacher, you know, God bless you. And were you an elementary school teacher, high school teacher? What kind of teacher were you?
I taught sixth grade math for 3 years.
Wow. Sixth grade math. That is just the age where they start to turn.
That is correct.
That is right. You've been a principal, been assistant principal. You've ran the central office at Lewis County, including child nutrition, which I find, I know a lot of directors that wear a multitude of hats, and I can just imagine the hats you were wearing in that job.
Yes, that provided me a good foundation for, education administration period. I started off as a child nutrition director, but I spent 17 years in the central office in Lewis County, and it seemed like my roles grew as the years went by. And I ended in Lewis County a little over a year ago, really child nutrition and heavy on curriculum, as I oversaw the principal of Lewis County High School and worked with them on career and technical education and just curriculum in general up there. So, anyhow, it was a good foundation for understanding how the education system works.
And then now you've recently made a move and become the exclusive child nutrition director, I guess, for now, at Harrison County Schools, also in West Virginia. And, you know, one of the things I read in your bio that you sent me that I know that we kind of share is that, you know, you said child nutrition is one of the pieces that I hope to bring more focus to the importance that child nutrition plays in the education process. And I've heard so many people talk about this in the shows that we've had, talking about how critical now that child nutrition has been elevated to a different level than it ever before, and it's in the eyes of the country and then in the eyes of boards of education. But now we're beginning to see that nutrition is not only critical to the health and well-being of a child, it's critical to the instruction day as well.
Well, I think that's something many child nutrition directors have always believed in. Mm-hmm. Maybe it wasn't a shared a value among everyone. It was just something isolated to child nutrition directors. And I have to admit, one positive out of COVID is I think we have seen how important child nutrition is. So obviously, and we can talk later, but we did respond to COVID, school closures, and making sure we continue to feed children throughout this time period. But the focus, I think, now, as we maybe are headed back to a little bit more normal times, is how important child nutrition plays in the education of each child each and every single day that they come to school and hopefully prepare to learn. So,
mm-hmm. You know, and you've held nearly every position, I think, that's available for an SNA on the state level and now moving into the national level. I mean, you've been, you, you, I, I just admire the many, many years of service you've given. I mean, not a lot of people serve 1 year as a state president. You served two or three, it looks like. And so, yeah, that says a lot for your commitment to the association and to child nutrition.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I've been very fortunate to surround myself with good people. And, you know, I started with always being a member of SNA. But I'll never forget, I was driving down the road and received a cell phone call from I believe the SNA president of West Virginia at the moment, and she was recruiting me to become part of the WSNA board. And that's basically how it began. And once I got some general knowledge of how the WSNA board operated, worked, I just had that ambition to maybe provide assistance to others, to help others to reach their goals, to provide quality professional development, and to also work on our national or our state conference and recruit more people to attend it and so forth. So once again, it takes that friend to reach out and pull someone along, or at least to get them to begin initially, if you know what I'm saying.
I think we're going to see a resurgence in state conferences too over the next couple of years, with COVID not really, districts not really either allowing travel or having the budget for travel. And then people's reluctance to just gather in large groups from across the country and fly on airplanes. I think state associations, state conferences are going to see in the coming year, 18 months, maybe 2 years, a renewed interest by people across their particular state.
Obviously, I almost would say it's been a roller coaster year over the past year. We've went around a lot of turns, been up and down. We've all had to learn to embrace technology. And we probably have learned a lot being thrown into the technology world if we had a limited knowledge of the Zoom calls, the team calls. And they definitely have a purpose. It's great to connect to someone who is on the other side of the country, so to speak. At the same time, let's face it, we are, I think, all missing in-person meetings, in-person conferences. So once again, the challenge moving forward is, when can we have in-person conferences again? And then it's going to be a balancing act of, when do you use technology and when is it strictly an in-person meeting, in-person conference? I think that's what the challenges are moving forward. And I think balance, we just got to work on it from there, from this point on and so forth. But I think we're all dying to go back to an SNA conference as soon as possible.
We are.
We all feel it's safe to do so and so forth. So
okay, so let me switch gears on you for a second. Okay, so I learned that you're a big Pittsburgh fan. You like the Penguins, the Pirates, and the Steelers.
Well, obviously, when it comes to professional sports, this part of West Virginia seems to go north to Pittsburgh for their professional sports, since West Virginia does not have any professional sports teams. So, yes, I do follow them as much as possible.
And you're a West Virginia Mountaineer. You graduated from West Virginia.
That's correct. So we live and die by the Golden Blue, in this parts of the state at least. So,
one more thing before I get into the first question is, tell me what a pepperoni roll is.
Well, that's a West Virginia born food product. A lot of history to that pepperoni roll. I didn't brush up on my history before I came on here. but basically it was a food that coal miners used because was shelf stable, something they could take down in the coal mines, provide them nutrition throughout the day. And it's become the West Virginia food, so to speak. You can't go to a grocery store, a convenience store without fresh homemade pepperoni rolls near the counter or whatever for you just to pick up and so forth. And to be honest with you, it's probably the favorite student lunch throughout all of West Virginia. Right. So, schools, that's probably what they focus on, or their specialty when it comes to homemade item is going to be their pepperoni rolls. So,
yeah, I saw a video on your Facebook page of somebody in your staff actually making one, and I was like, I'm going to have to show this to my wife because they look good.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I don't know why. Part of the regulations, pepperoni is considered shelf stable here in West Virginia. It's my understanding that in other parts of the country, that is not true. So one reason that prevents pepperoni rolls from taking off in other states and so forth. But I have picked up some pepperoni rolls and mailed them to some friends in other states who just wanted to try them and so forth. But actually, I've always wondered when I stop and go to a game or just off to an evening out somewhere and I need to grab a quick bite, that's what we all go to here in West Virginia. I don't know what other states are picking up, if you know what I'm saying. That's just our go-to item. So
yeah, they look great. And, you know, as we kind of get into the show, one last thing is, you know, as we said earlier, you've got this broad understanding of education from the classroom to the lunchroom and every place in between. But I know you have one particular love, and you know, I this particular time of year, you tell me, is very special to you, and that you just love March Madness. So fill us in on that little bit about you, Chris.
Well, you got to know a little background, I guess, to fully understand what March means. But first of all, I'm a high school and a college basketball official. I referee at the Division II level and below. So literally, traditionally, you know, COVID's a little bit different, but traditionally in January and February, I'm literally out on the road somewhere refereeing a ball game every night, high school game or college game. So obviously throughout the winter time, January and February, there's a little wear and tear on your body physically. There's a little wear and tear mentally. And when March comes, there's a little bit more excitement in the air. It is tournament time, both high school, college, locally, the games here, and then also what's on the TV. Also, March is springtime. So the weather's going to turn here in West Virginia. Sun's out a little bit longer. There's a little bit more warmth to the air. So I think psychologically, there's just that rebirth. There's a little bit of excitement in the air and so forth. So between spring, summer finally appearing, basketball season coming to an end, but yet we're still in the celebration of the tournaments and March Madness, it's a good time of year, if you know what I'm saying. So
I do. I agree.
Yeah.
I will share one more story about West Virginia is a little different this year with COVID. And we delayed our high school basketball season until March. So the first games of basketball for high school in West Virginia did not play until March 3rd. So we're just now finishing the first month of our basketball season, still plan on playing throughout April with the tournaments, the state championships, late April, early May. So it's definitely a little odd this year, just having basketball this late, if you know what I'm saying. So when I finish this interview, I'm off to a game. How's that for you?
Very nice. Well, before we dive into, you know, some of the kind of questions we've got laid out for you, I'm so curious about this pizza roll or this pepperoni roll. Is it just pepperoni with like wrapped with cheese, or is it vice versa, or what exactly is it? Because I've never heard of this before.
Well, Wes, the original pepperoni roll would have been nothing more than pepperoni roll or pepperoni sticks.
Okay.
That are rolled in raw dough. And then it's simply baked. So you'd be biting into a small loaf of bread with pepperoni sticks in it. Now, obviously, through the years, there's a variant of that recipe. Some people will tell you they prefer the sticks. Some's going to tell you they prefer slices of pepperoni in the roll. Then you can get into adding cheese to the pepperoni roll. And then, of course, a lot of people will take the finished pepperoni roll and slice it and possibly add more cheese or peppers and so forth. So there's a variety of things you can do with it, but the basic roll is nothing more than pepperoni and bread.
I am so surprised this has not caught on in other places because I've never heard of this before. And it sounds fantastic. I mean, it's obviously close to lunchtime, so I'm starving and just salivating thinking about this pepperoni roll, but it sounds fantastic.
Well, as Bart will tell you, there is a TikTok video on my Facebook page that shows it's basically some of my kitchen staff, the process of making that pepperoni roll from flour. I mean, it's the whole process, start to finish. So you can go on there and see that and so forth. And I'll be honest with you, I'm in Harrison County, West Virginia. Clarksburg's the seat. And the original pepperoni roll began in Fairmont, West Virginia, which is 10 to 15 miles north of me here. So,
wow. Well, we'll have to go and find that video. Then you said it's on TikTok?
It's on TikTok and it's on my Facebook page.
Got it. Well, my wife makes fun of me because I've never used TikTok and I just call it Tic Tac. every time she brings it up, I was like, okay, fine, I'll get you a breath mint. No worries.
Well, let me share a story about TikTok, and maybe this will even lead you into some of your questions, okay? But obviously, as I was preparing for the SNA election, one of the things I did do was I gathered a core group of child nutrition directors, friends, colleagues, and we sat down to do a little bit of strategy about what was going to be my approach to campaign and get my name out there. And it was my colleagues that came up that said I should promote the pepperoni roll. So through conversations and just discussions, it was decided that I should do TikTok video of how the pepperoni roll was made and so forth. So that's how that came about. But I'll have to admit, Wes, I never had done anything on TikTok. And so I luckily had resources of some young people that, and including my daughter, who's only 15 years old, that could educate me on TikTok and how to do the videoing, how to add music to it. It was pretty neat to learn, if you know what I'm saying. But if you asked me 6 months ago, and I'll be honest with you, every time I would type in TikTok in an email or something, I had no idea how it was spelled. I just had to always look it up because I just could not remember. So.
Yeah, there's just so many different social media platforms out there and so many ways that people are connecting, especially in the past 12 months. I mean, it's just amazing the creativity that people have gone to really stay connecting. You guys were mentioning, you know, the, you know, kind of burning desire to get back to in-person meetings and things of that nature. I know that we're all kind of longing for that. But, you know, for the time being, social media and just some of these different applications and websites have been very helpful with keeping people at least feeling a little bit connected in a very disconnected time.
No, I agree 100%. It's definitely provided that the tools we needed for this time period. Once again, I do think we're all going to be excited to go to that first conference when that opportunity permits itself from each of us. So,
yeah. And I do want to talk about a little bit later on in the show some of the different tools that you're utilizing with your team specifically. But I want to ask one other kind of, you know, intro question. I know we're kind of running a little long in the intro, but tell everyone a little bit about something that you're just absolutely obsessed right now, whether it's TikTok or Tic Tac, however you want to refer to it, or just something else that you're just really passionate about right now.
Well, we mentioned some of the things, you know, it's March Madness, so it's obviously basketball season, so there's a little bit of obsession with that and so forth. And I'm just like every other child nutrition director, I'm navigating COVID and how we're feeding children. And my earlier reference, it's been a little bit of a roller coaster. We've had to change our format at different times on how we were doing things because students were in school part of the time and so forth. And we can talk more about that later, but you know, the other thing that's on my mind is maybe some personal time because it's been a very busy year. And I do have a little vacation planned later this month or late April, I should say. And I'm looking forward to maybe just some personal time where a little extra sleep, the time to do a little bit more extra physical exercise for myself and just a little relaxation is something that's on my mind. And once again, I think we all need to take care of ourselves. And sometimes some downtime's good. So that's something I'm looking forward to. So,
yeah. And we've heard that from a few people that have been on the show here recently, just, you know, the kind of rediscovering of that personal time and, you know, the creation of those moments with family and the ones that we really hold dearest. So I think that could not be, you know, more important than it is. It sounds like it is in the coming days for you. Who in your career and in your life has just really played a major role in your professional development and your personal development that you'd like to maybe highlight?
Well, a little quick story that answers that question is I one time had to do a little presentation about my leadership path. And when I was preparing that presentation, it made me do some reflecting on how I got to where I am today, so to speak. And the one thing that came to mind, and maybe I always knew this, but never really to the level, is my father. Real quick about my father, he grew up on a farm, and he's told this story many times, but one thing he realized was he was not wanting to be a farmer the rest of his life. So he became the first person in his family to go to college, and he became an educator. And to be honest with you, he had a very successful career as a teacher, athletic director, principal, spent time in the central office as the transportation director and the business manager. He was fortunate to retire from public education early to become the principal of a small Catholic elementary school in his town. And once he did that, he immediately ran for the public board of education and spent 20 years doing that.
Wow.
So anyhow, the one thing that I realized about my father was, regardless of his schedule or my schedule when I was a kid, he always made it home for dinner. Now, it might have only been 10 minutes. It might have been a quick turnaround for him because he had to go back to an evening activity or whatever. But obviously, and there was some exceptions, but we always had dinner together is what I remember. And I think those informal conversations at the dinner table laid the foundation for my knowledge of the education world, if you know what I'm saying, because that was the topic of conversation. What happened at work today and what's going on? And there's just a wealth of knowledge that was shared at that dinner table, so to speak. And that's what hit me when I was doing that presentation. So it's probably my father I'd have to recognize the most about where I'm at today and so forth. So.
That's really cool to hear you say, you know, obviously I've got my father on the show with us today, and, you know, the influence that he's made on my life, I can completely relate to what you're saying. You know, part of the passion that I have for school nutrition and the food service industry in general really stems from the, you know, kind of the immersion at the dinner table. And it really kind of stems all from those family, you know, meetings, you know, together, breaking bread and sharing that time together, that focus time, talking about the day, talking about the struggles of school nutrition professionals and really the opportunities in the industry and the changes that have happened. And I think, you know, speaking of changes, we've all seen a lot of changes in this past year, specifically in school nutrition. And it's really required many of us to make some big pivots in our operations, whether it be a business pivot or whether it be just an operational or a staffing pivot. Talk to us a little bit about maybe a change or a pivot that you've had to make with yourself and your team over the course of the past 12 months.
Sure. The first pivot was I switched districts. Some people know this, some don't know the timing, but I'd made the decision to move from Lewis County to Harrison County back in December of like 2019. And I was hired either in December or January, but had negotiated a March start date. So all that was prior to the words COVID being mentioned. We had delayed my start in Harrison just so I could finish up some business in Lewis and so forth. And so in West Virginia, the schools closed, and I had one more week in Lewis County. So I was in Lewis County trying to begin the emergency feeding process and procedures that we were going to implement there. I was staying in tune with what was happening in Harrison County and even assisting a little bit. And then one week later, I showed up at my office in Harrison County, literally with no one else around. As I sometimes like to joke, you know, I knew nothing. I didn't know how to use the telephone, didn't know where the bathroom was. I mean, I was starting at ground zero, so to speak, and trying to get up to Harrison County procedures and what was going on and starting to navigate how we are going to continue to feed kids and so forth. So that was a major pivot, just switching districts and so forth. And to be honest with you, I haven't looked back once. I've been very happy with my decision, even though there's been challenges and hurdles that maybe most people wouldn't have had to navigate with COVID. I don't have any second regrets there or anything. once again, I think we're all in the same boat. I know we went from feeding kids every single day, making food was available at the front door, so to speak, on a daily basis, to we distributed to once a week. We've used some food boxes that we've purchased from other companies to just be able to distribute. And then we started navigating back to school, and kids were going to school twice a week, remote 3 days, and trying to provide the meal service, you know, all 5 days, the 2 days they were in school plus the 3 days they were at home. So once again, I got to give accolades for my staff for being the ones that pivoted. They've often had to change, and sometimes it was frustrating or challenging, I should say. But once again, they've lived up to the task, and maybe they were nervous. Maybe they didn't feel comfortable at first, but once they got through the hurdles, then they felt comfortable, and they have performed extremely well, and we've all been very happy with them and so forth. So,
mm-hmm. Hey, Chris, one thing I noticed in your information you sent to me was that you've worked out some kind of, I guess, partnership or maybe some kind of program you're doing with FedEx, which I thought was, I mean, I don't have many details here. I'm anxious to hear some because it sounds pretty innovative. And how are you, and how's that working for you?
Well, I should say that basically as of March 1st in my district and in most districts, in some form or another, we went back to school full time here in West Virginia. So obviously I'm providing meal service to the students in school 5 days a week now. We were also asked to continue our food service for students that were at home learning virtually and also homeschool students and so forth. And obviously, since we're operating the summer food program, we had that opportunity. The challenge I had was how could my staff do that when they're obviously taking care of students who are currently in school like they've done always in the past. And once again, the one thing I can always say is I try to always network and learn from others. And that way, if an opportunity arises, I can use what I've learned from others to my advantage and in my situation. There was a local company that is within my region, they're only 20 miles away probably, that had started preparing food boxes for both schools if they needed them. And also they do some work with senior citizens and so forth. So it was actually the company that worked out with FedEx and came up with the idea of basically delivering food boxes to students' front doors. So working with that company, we are sending food boxes to any student who is learning virtually, homeschool, or is even too young to be in school yet. All they have to do is register on my school's website. And every Thursday, a food box arrives at their house. We've done it for 4 weeks. This week will be our fifth. And really, it's been real smooth. We've had a couple of small issues. But literally, when I say small, they're small issues. And people have been real pleased with the food boxes. And it's a service I'm glad to provide. And once again, it just was something that I was in the right place at the right time. This company had explored this for a couple of different reasons. And I think FedEx maybe even worked with this company so the shipping prices were appropriate for us and so forth. So it's been a good system for us. So
that's very cool. That's very cool.
How have you gone, just out of curiosity, how have you gone about marketing this? Because this is a very unique thing. This first person that I've heard mention doing something like this. What is your approach been to notifying the community of these different opportunities?
Well, there's a couple of things I think we have been very successful with. I have a good relationship with our local newspaper, and it's a fairly large regional newspaper here in West Virginia. So obviously the newspaper had several articles about it and so forth. The other thing that I'm very fortunate to have here in Harrison County that I did not necessarily have in Lewis County was we're a larger school system, and we do have a communications office. So I can usually fire off what's going on to them in an email, and they create some of the best social media posts that I could ask for. So obviously we have hit social media hard on our district's websites and so forth. So the combination of social media and print newspaper has been our two sources. And like I said, it's been well received. People still continue to sign up week to week. We still have a handful that's new to us and so forth. So we get it going.
That's really cool. And you bring a very diverse background to your role, you know, being a teacher and a principal. How do those backgrounds really play into your current role as a child nutrition director and influence maybe some of the things that you do and maybe the approaches that you take with your team?
Well, I think obviously I'm involved in general central office meetings with other administrators and so forth. So when they're talking about programs, I have the background of what those programs are and how they're going to be in operation in general, which sometimes is important so that I can make appropriate moves or decisions with child nutrition to maximize meeting the needs of kids, to be able to maximize our involvement and so forth. So that probably the best example, we're talking about summer programs right now. So when they're talking about the curricular programs they're going to be offering at the different schools, I can see how child nutrition will fit or be part of that program, whether it's breakfast, lunch, be supper or a snack program or whatever. And I think that's just having that background knowledge allows me to make better decisions and just maximize child nutrition's benefit and so forth. So.
And since you referenced the summer feeding programs, what are your thoughts on the extension of waivers for this year?
Well, if you're mentioning the fact that they've been extended through September 30th, I think it's great for child nutrition directors to know they're extended at least through September 30th, because at least what I find, and I think we're all like this, we're planners. I'm planning for summer right now, and it's not even April yet. And I'm actually looking at next school year, because you start that process now. So the fact that I know they're at least extended through September 30th helps. I'm probably like everyone else would like to know what happens after September 30th, just so I can start making decisions. Obviously, I'm glad that we had the summer food program waivers and could use the summer food program during this COVID times. But I think what's occurring now is what's next. What's next for child nutrition? What is there a better method in the next time that we need an emergency feeding program? Is summer the best option? Or is there some other way to make emergency feeding a little bit easier, both for the operator and also to make sure it's easier for the students to receive the meals? So I think those are the conversations and the dialogues we got to have moving forward, so that once again, just so we can benefit the children through the child nutrition programs. Probably the one other thing I'll comment on, you may not have the background knowledge on West Virginia and CEP program and free meals, but out of the 55 school districts in West Virginia, all but 10 are totally CEP. So the majority of students in West Virginia have been receiving free meals for some time. Out of the 10 that are not fully CEP, only one is not implementing CEP to some extent and so forth. So once again, most of the students in West Virginia do receive free meals. Harrison County was one of those schools that there was a handful of schools that did not receive free meals. Obviously, this school year with COVID, we're allowed to do that. And I also, without going into all the details, had already been working on to making sure that I was including them in the CEP program next year. So regardless of waivers, whatever, I'm very proud to say that in Harrison County, all the students will be receiving free meals, regardless of what happens with regulations and so forth. And I think maybe even more schools will be, districts will be adding to their CEP schools and so forth. So.
Well, you know, since you have a very unique perspective on CEP and you know, free meals for all kids, is now the time for the rest of the country to start pushing for legislation for free meals for all kids?
Here's what I would tell you on that. To answer your question directly, I think yes. I think we could use the COVID past year as the beginning point of how it's worked and what's been good about it, and use that as a springboard into those conversations. My personal philosophy, and once again, it's just a personal slash professional philosophy that we offer almost everything in the education system free of charge, transportation, textbooks, and so forth. So I think it's time that we offer breakfast and lunch free to all students as well. And once again, maybe that just goes back to my belief that breakfast and lunch is part of the educational day. It's not something before school. It's not something just a break in the middle of the day. It's actually part of the educational day, and therefore it should be free, just like every other aspect of that day is free. So,
well, you and I both participated in LAC, our virtual LAC we had a couple of weeks, or like about 3 weeks ago right now, I guess. I'm going to be, I was involved in several virtual, Zoom the Hill meetings, and with legislators, and we actually got to talk to several legislators, not just their aides. Not one single person that we talked to was opposed to the concept of free meals for all. Not one. I'm going to be real interested to see, and that was on both sides of the aisle. I'm going to be real interested in the data that comes back from SNA over the surveys and what happened, because I think this, you're right. It is absolutely time to, we've proven over the last year we can do it. You're proven, and with they've done it with the CEP programs. So why not just make it a part of what you get? So there's not this lunch shaming thing, these budget shortfalls because people aren't paying their unpaid meal debt. It just would solve so many problems.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Once again, I think COVID has taught us quite a bit. We've learned, all of us, regardless of where we come from, where our background is, COVID has inspired us, taught us many things, especially with technology. And in our jobs of child nutrition, we've also learned a lot. And this is the opportunity now to look at just making all meals free for all students, regardless of situation and so forth. So,
yeah. Now, a second ago, you mentioned that you're already starting to plan and kind of think about this upcoming school year, starting in the fall. As part of that planning, what are some of the preparation steps that you've taken with your team specifically to kind of either keep them motivated and inspired for this upcoming school year, whether it be philosophy changes, shifts, mind shifts, or maybe just procedural things just to keep them, get them prepared, I guess.
Well, Wes, a couple of things, me being new to the district and really never being in the district during normal times yet, the one thing, since we just did go back to school 5 days a week, being in March, I have the philosophy, I just want to get through this year. In other words, I mean that in a positive manner. I don't want to throw anything new at them. I think we've been on that roller coaster long enough that I'm very happy with where we're at. And the next 3 months of school, I just want to serve the students the best we can. We've had challenges with, resourcing food, distributors low on certain things. So once again, navigate that, get through the end of May. We basically end the last day of May, 1st of June. And then start fresh come August, September. One key thing that is on my mind is professional development and training. Yeah. If we are going back to the National School Lunch Program, we haven't done it for, by that time, it's going to be 14, 15, 16 months. And we all need a refresher on some of the regulations related to National School Lunch Program. So that's the first thing. And that goes back to, I would love to know what the final regulations are for next school year, because that's part of my professional development, is making sure we're all starting on the same page. What are the rules for 2021, 22? And I think that's just key. If you start on that right foot, your year will be successful. And so training, professional development, communication is the key, I think. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, with professional development, I know that we all three of us share a passion for professional development in general. What are some different things that you've implemented this year or plan to implement at the beginning of this upcoming school year to really, obviously we don't know exactly what we're going to be training on maybe, but what are you planning on doing as far as a training and tracking and ultimately ongoing education for your team?
Well, I think maybe one thing that's in my mind is I don't feel like I've been a strong usage of farm to school products during COVID times. Everything was so unpredictable that it was tough for me to work with local farmers or my regional hubs of local source food because I didn't know what my supply and demand would be. So when I was in Lewis County, I had a real strong farm to school program. So that's one thing I've not liked about what has occurred with COVID. So my plan is come fall to hit farm to school as much as I can. So once again, there'll be some training and I'm exploring opportunities with local farmers now actually, and what we can do to use more local source foods moving forward come next school year. So that's one key component that's there at the top of my mind. So
very interesting. You know, just kind of in the last kind of closing comments, you know, as we wrap up today's show and as we're getting close to wrapping up the end of the school year, heading into summer and planning for the upcoming school year, what advice would you have with your extensive expertise in the industry and just your, you know, deep background in various areas throughout the school district? What advice would you give to child nutrition directors as we head into these planning months ahead?
Well, first of all, maybe this is something that I've always done, and I try to tell everyone to do this. I have a group of colleagues, you know, that I can always call upon. I can email, pick up the phone and call. I network with when we're together at meetings. And once again, if you just listen to what they're doing in their school district and put it in the back of your head, it may apply to you someday. May take it a little tweak or whatever on your end. I think that's so much the key. I don't know if I can say this 100% sure, but there's probably not a day goes by I don't pick up the phone or email a colleague with a quick question or get their thought process on something, because I just think all of us working together is how we solve these hurdles and so forth. And obviously over the past year, trust me, I was on the phone a lot or email, how are they doing things and the pros and cons of it and trying to see how that applied to me in my district. Once again, some of the old sayings, sometimes the best business gets done on the golf course. And once again, the lesson out of that is the informal conversations often is where you learn a lot. So that's what's missing about in-person meetings. If you're doing a Zoom meeting or a virtual meeting, when the meeting's over, you close the computer and go home. But if you're at a conference, you're going to go out to get dinner together. You're going to network and just have those informal conversations. And that is when I've learned so much from people and what they're doing across the country. And I've been able to utilize here in my district. So that's what I miss the most. I think a lot of people miss that. And we're all excited to get back to that, hopefully in the near future. So, yeah.
Bart, any last closing comments for you?
Well, you know, I think the only thing that I would, it's been my mantra at the end of most shows we've had, and that's this. We have a tremendous momentum in child nutrition. Child nutrition has been elevated to a place and status in school districts and communities across the country that it's never enjoyed before. We always appreciate, Chris, you and I, Wes, we all knew that these ladies and gentlemen were heroes. But now they're not only heroes, they're first responders. They're essential staff. And I think I would love to see, Chris, you know, and from an SNA perspective or from, you know, just a local perspective, constant encouragement to these directors to stay in front of their school boards, constant encouragement to stay in front of their principals and to continue. Don't allow the things to get back to normal. And then all of a sudden nobody's thinking about child nutrition anymore. And that, because I think that you're right. We have two opportunities. I feel like right now, the number one opportunity is to elevate nutrition into the realm of the instruction day, that make it that important. And the second thing is to become a part of what's going on in the school district at the administration level. Now, many directors are like that, but you and I both know there's many directors that are not. And can you to elevate that so that child nutrition takes a different role in school districts across the country, and, you know, the possibility of, you know, feeding kids for free. I think those are big things. I mean, I talked a lot and I apologize, but I'm passionate about it.
Well, no, Bart, you're correct. I think every central office is going to be different of how they operate. But if the child nutrition director can have a seat at the table for the weekly administrative meetings or bi-weekly administrative meetings, provide some reports to the school board when appropriate, wherever that timing is. I think that is key. Have that slot during the monthly principals meetings or however often they are held. So I just think you're correct. We have to keep that momentum going. And I'll put a little plug in for SNA because I worked on this today. School Lunch Hero Day is May 7th. And I was today working on some information that I was sending to my board, the board secretary, to get on an appropriate board agenda for them to make an proclamation and to recognize the cooks and our cafeteria managers for the work they've done for the past year and several months now. So I think that's important. I'd recommend people take a look at that on the SNA webpage and utilize that item, that information. So,
absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Chris, Bart, thank you both for being on the show. Go ahead, Bart.
I was going to say, maybe we get that, Chris, we'll get that information from you when we get offline and we put that in the show notes so that people can access it right here.
And once again, not only did I send stuff to my, be the board secretary to get on the agenda, I was sending it to my social media specialist to make sure there's posts come May. I'm a little bit ahead of schedule, but I didn't want it to catch me when I was in a hurry for something else, if you know what I'm saying. So,
well, gentlemen, thanks again for being on the show, Chris. I really appreciate it. Bart, pleasure to see you. And I hope you both have a great rest of your weekend. For everyone out there watching, this has been another episode of Friday Food Fight. We look forward to seeing you here again next week at 12 o'clock Pacific Standard Time.